Hey guys, episode number 36 coming at you for Devheads and Hiddlestoners. I'm Jen.
I'm Terry.
And we're going to be taking you on the last part of a night manager tour. Before we do that, anything we need to discuss or talk about not pertaining to the body of the podcast?
You know, I was going to maybe inquire about what the latest was on Amber Heard's
statements. I'm so glad you asked.
She's done some statements, right?
She has. And I don't know if you've heard this one yet. I just heard it last night. She has gone on record as stating that anything that she did to Johnny was not her fault, because he pushed her to the point of not knowing right from wrong. Now, I have a couple of issues with that. Issue number one, if you didn't know the difference between right and wrong, why did you call the police? You had to know something. It had to trigger something in that tiny pea brain she might have. You know, you don't call the cops if everything's copacetic and you have no idea the difference between right and wrong. Number two, okay, you lost. Get over it. You were wrong. You know you were wrong. You were caught in so many damn lies. And now you're going to pull this bullshit? You are desperate and it shows. And because of this, Johnny will never offer her the deal. Never. If he does, I'm sorry, Johnny, but if you offer her the deal after this, you're an idiot.
Okay, so what's the deal?
I do not know what her angle is yet. I'm sure she has one.
Yeah, well, what was the deal that he offered her?
No, he hasn't. What was it? It hadn't been offered. It had been discussed.
All right. Okay.
The deal with if Amber would agree not to appeal the decision made by the court in Virginia, you know, this most recent, then Johnny would not make her pay the money that she owes him through the lawsuit. He would forego the money as long as she would agree to let the verdict stand and not appeal.
That's a hell of a deal.
It's a hell of a deal. But, just after this, after that statement, no, I cannot imagine that his lawyers would even allow him to consider offering that deal now.
No.
But yeah, she doesn't know the difference between right and wrong. Bitch, you didn't know the difference between right and wrong as soon as you opened your mouth.
Well, you know, and not knowing the difference between right and wrong doesn't excuse you from, you know, essentially criminal behavior, defamation, that sort of, you know, if that were the case, then, you know.
But she's trying to get.
Murders would be fine.
She's trying to get past the stigma she is now carrying of being an abuser.
Right.
It was proven over and over again in court. Unfortunately, the case was not about abuse. It was about defamation. So, you know, that kind of. But because it all came out in court, and because it was a publicized trial, and because so many people watched it, everybody with half a brain knows what she's done, how she's acted, and what she's put people through. And not just Johnny. Many, many other people, too. So, and let me do an aside here. We do have some other people in our studio today. So if y'all hear any background noise, it's because we've got people coming in and out. So it's a little trafficky here. So just ignore it if you hear it, guys. But yeah. So back to the Amber Heard thing. But yeah, it's just crazy. I cannot imagine what possessed her to think that, okay, since she couldn't rig the trial like she did the last two, that she could get away with now saying she didn't know the difference between right and wrong. Her actions at the time of the, quote, alleged abuse, show clearly that she understood what she said was happening was wrong. So, you know, it doesn't fly.
Well, you know, it's not flying with the public, but I wonder if she's doing this for any future contract work. You know, she might be trying to offer an explanation to the executives at Warner Brothers.
Well, if that was the case, would you want someone who reacted to stress by checking out and not being able to understand the difference between right and wrong? Would you want to work with somebody like that? Uh-uh. So, you know, that, I don't know. I don't know what her angle is, but, yeah, she's gone out there and she has gone well past what anybody would have ever suspected her to do, except maybe a psychiatrist. But yeah, I don't know what she thinks she might accomplish with this, but I can't see it happening.
I can't see either.
Any good coming out of this. Not for her.
No. Yeah, I would love to revisit this, you know, at the end of the year.
Right, well, I still have to put your prediction. You've got to tell everybody your prediction. 2 years?
Okay, look. When you and I discussed this previously, I was very loud. I was very proud about this prediction.
Okay. I think you should stick to it, though.
Well, I am sticking to it.
Okay.
That being said, I'd rather not tell the listeners what I said. I don't want to.
You don't want to jinx
loud.
It?
Okay.
Or?
What she's about to say, I did say it, but I don't want to.
Oh, it's going on the blog,
it
too.
It be recorded.
It's going on the blog, too.
Go ahead.
All right, guys.
I stand by it. You're right.
Carrie's prediction was that within 2 years, we will see an upsurge for Johnny Depp in his career as far as his movie making. Now, his career as far as a musician has not even paused. So, you know, apparently, those of us who follow musicians are not near as judgmental as those of you that follow movies.
Right, absolutely.
But yeah, his music career has not faltered at all, and he and Jeff Beck have just put out an album. They've released a single called, my brain just went blank. I'll make sure I put it up on the blog, and I'll record, I'll have a link to the video as well. Him and Jeff Beck have just recorded an album, and he's been touring with Hollywood Vampires, too. So, you know, his music career is already on track. But prediction is within 2 years, we will see an upsurge in his movie making as well. So we're going to put that on the blog. Check that out for us.
And the reason that I'm a little reserved about that is because Johnny May, and I've thought about this for a moment. I think there is a possibility that Johnny's about to get paid. You know what I mean?
If she can't afford to pay him.
Well, okay, good point. That being said, I really do think that he's got enough in the Depp coffers for him to kind of take it easy for a bit. He may forego any acting projects for the next year or so to concentrate on his music.
He very well might.
He can kind of do what he wants and whatever he feels is best for his career, whatever he feels best for his creativity.
Well, it's his creativity more than... It's his creativity more than his career. He's never focused on his career. That's what makes him so popular.
Okay, so Jeff Beck and Johnny Depp have recorded Isolation?
No, that was back when the pandemic hit. That was back in 2019.
Well,
they've recorded a second.
Lot of listens.
Oh yeah, they've recorded a second one, or they've released the second one It's Song Force. I'm trying to think who.
Celebrity guest, special guest.
No, it's a song for this lady that used to be Hedy Lamarr. Thank you. The song for Hedy Lamarr is the name of the...
Oh, my God.
Yes. And it's awesome. I've listened to it. It is great.
You know, we should do an episode where we focus on Johnny's music.
Yeah, we did a Hollywood Vampires episode. But in order to play the music where you can hear and understand it on the podcast, I have to get releases. And that's a little difficult, being you know, the status we are right now.
Well, folks, you know, they should check it out themselves. We don't necessarily have to do that. That being said, I didn't know that he was so gifted.
Oh, he's brilliant.
Well, musically, you know, yeah. Keanu Reeves, I'm a huge Keanu Reeves fan, and he classifies himself as a musician also. Guess what?
What?
He's actually not that great.
Yeah, but Johnny is.
You know what I mean? Yeah, and Johnny is. Well, and, you know, I don't know. Well, I guess it's worth exploring. Being said, much love to Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, he's also one of my favorites. I
love
really
Keanu Reeves.
I love watching his movies in progression, so you can watch him grow up from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I think he did one movie before that, before Bill and Ted. But, you know, Bill and Ted is what brought him really out into the limelight.
Come on, for real. Absolutely.
And,
you know, you're watching
this as an adult going, oh, those guys will never go anywhere. And, Winters, I believe is his last name, the one that plays Bill.
Yeah, Alex Winters.
Yeah. I know him from one other role. He was Marco in The Lost Boys.
That's right.
And I've not seen him in, I've seen him play bit parts in other things, but nothing major after Bill and Ted. So, you know, one of those was correct, but, Keanu Reeves went on to progress all the way through Constantine and, you know, around various other things, The Matrix and the John Wick stories, and he has just become a phenomenon as far as acting goes.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, also known as just kind of a fellow cool guy. We've done that degrees of separation between Hiddleston and...
Depp.
Johnny Depp. I would love to see the degrees of separation between Depp and Keanu Reeves.
We may have surely to do that.
That's surely they've hung out. And they are known. They are known as being super nice kind of bros that really enjoy interacting with their fans.
Oh, and it's great. Have you ever seen pictures of Keanu Reeves with his fans?
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, one thing that is different with Keanu Reeves than with... He holds his hands out to the sides to make sure that the camera sees he is not doing anything he shouldn't. And he does that not out of fear that someone is going to come back at him. He does it out of respect for the people that he is standing around, for his fans. It's a total, absolute show of respect that, you know, that he does that. It's just, it's very, very cool. And I think it's amazing.
Yes, I do too.
All right, so we've covered all that. Let's get into it. Night Manager. Episodes 4 through 6. And I gotta say, guys, it's on Amazon Prime right now, streaming. If you get the chance, check it out, man. Night Manager is the best 6 hours you will spend in front of a TV, I swear to God.
You know, everybody, it seems, has Amazon Prime. You know, you want that for your free shipping, that sort of thing. But a lot of people don't realize how much fantastic content you get on Amazon, Amazon Video.
Right.
And Night Manager is just one of their typical gold nuggets.
Yep.
That you can watch. You know, it's easy, guys.
Oh, yeah. And you know, they show a lot of things that you would not normally see on other streaming services. Night Manager, again, being one of those things.
Only, right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've picked up movies on Amazon Prime that I didn't even know could be transmitted digitally. You know, movies from the 50s and 60s, movies from the early 80s. Yeah, so check them out, too. They're awesome. Now, this was put out in 2016. It was filmed in 2015. Of course, your stars, you've got Tom Hiddleston. You've got, trying to get to the right page in my notes, sorry. You've got Elizabeth Debicki. You've got Hugh Laurie is another one. All kinds of folks.
Yeah,
let's see. Olivia Colman. Tom Hollander.
Yep.
Now, David Harwood, I did mention this last time we did Night Manager. I'm going to mention it again.
Joel.
Joel Steadman. He is a British actor who excels in producing the American accent.
Right.
He's done it twice. He did it in, I want to say...
Well, he's John Jones in Supergirl. You know, he plays the Martian Manhunter, you know. And I had no idea. That's where I kind of knew him from first. I had no idea he was a British actor.
Right. Well, in Homeland, he plays the CIA director with the American accent. And then, of course, Night Manager, he plays Joel Steadman, who is an FBI agent working with MI6. So, yeah, and he does the American accent with both of those. Just a little sidebar, I thought this was interesting. When Barr's character gives Pine the phone number, the contact number, when she tells him to get Sophie out of the hotel because she's in danger, the number she gives him has 007 in the digits.
Right.
So I just thought that was kind of cool.
Which, by the way, all of the James Bond films, for the most part, are available to watch right now on Amazon Prime.
Are they? Okay.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, the first James Bond I ever saw, believe it or not, was Octopussy. My mother was in love with that movie. I don't know why. I've watched it since, and Bond is great, but I think it's the language that my mom just couldn't get over.
Sure.
But yeah, that was her favorite Bond, and I got to see it many, many times.
And you know, I loved how Night Manager, I know it's Le Carre, and he was a contemporary of Ian Fleming, but it kind of checks all of those boxes with the spy, the British, particularly the British spy.
Right.
Vibe, the spy novels.
Yes. The whole feel is definitely Bond-ish.
It's a very British production. I know it was a joint production.
It was a joint monetary venture. It was a British production.
Well said.
To third world countries bothers him. She keeps asking him over and over again, you know, why did you do this? Why did you contact me? He says, I don't know. She says, I think you do. And in the end, he finally says, look, when you know that someone is British and is doing this stuff and you're British, I don't know, you just do it. It's a classic.
That's an amazing observation, and that's an amazing scene.
Oh, it is. Especially when she picks up the book that was his father's.
Right.
Oh, I didn't know it meant that much to you. Yes, you did.
Right. You know, it was all very well thought out.
Oh,
and,
extremely.
You know, I really do think by episodes 4, 5, and 6, they really, really, really hit their stride. And I'm excited about us talking about 4, 5, and 6 because, you know, episode 1 was fascinating. They set us up with the characters. Fantastic. 2 kind of set the action in motion, but the payoff starts coming with episodes 4, 5, and 6.
Absolutely. And I do believe you said episode 4 was your least favorite.
Okay, so, but, and what? Yes.
But I think we discussed this yesterday, how important it is to the body of the story.
Yeah. You know, you need episode 4. You know, you have to be patient because episode 4 is giving you
background,
additional data that you're going to need.
Yep, and it does move a little slower than the other 5 episodes.
Yeah, but we find out much more about Trade Pass, you know, this kind of front.
Right, and you find out a lot more about Jed and about Corky. Corky,
right.
Of course, believe it or not, in my opinion, Corky is really, that's your true villain of the show. Even though he is only one member of the, the system that delivers these weapons, he's the bane of Jonathan Pine's existence from the moment he shows up on their radar.
Yeah, right. You know, it almost seems like he's sort of the Darth Vader to Hugh Laurie's Emperor Palpatine. You know,
that's awesome. That is a great analogy. I love it.
Yeah, you know, he's kind of the action guy, but, you know, the bad action guy. But when it comes down to it, you know, the real puppet master
is Hugh Laurie.
That's right.
Is Roper.
Right.
But yeah, but now in episode 4, that's where you kind of start seeing that Corky is a watchdog. He's paying attention, even though you think he might not be. He's noticing a lot of things that you're really wishing he probably wouldn't. And he has the boss's ear. And he makes it a point to let them know, without being overt, that he saw this and that he has drawn his own conclusions as to why she was there.
Right. You kind of get sort of a detective work kind of angle in episode 4 where you find out, Halo and Felix,
Halo and Felix are the call names for the two black operatives that
are working
for Roper, and they are in MI6.
Yeah, and you know, it is, if you will, like, just for sitting and viewing, I mean, it's my least favorite episode, but that being said, it's a very important episode for the rest of the arc.
Right, definitely. You get more information on Jed in that one episode.
Yeah.
Than you do, with the exception of episode 6. Because until episode 6, I mean, you're going to see Jed as this fluffy little armband. She's a piece of jewelry. She is bought and paid for, and she's there to look pretty and shut the hell up.
Yeah.
But, you know, in episode 6, she kind of really shows her mettle and just how strong an individual she actually is. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
And, I mean, she comes through with flying colors is all I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she has the same attitude as most of us females do in this day and age. We protect what's ours.
That's right.
And she does. She does a great job.
Yeah, it was a fantastic characterization.
Oh, yeah. She did so well. There was one itineration where LaCara was hoping to procure Julia Roberts to play the part of Jed. I love Julia. I think she's amazing. She's a great actress. I don't think she would have been right for this part. I just don't.
I agree. You know, and it was a splendid production. The casting was pretty spot on, but...
You got something on your mind. Spit it out.
Well, and you know, I'm not trying to detract from this fantastic series.
Right, of course.
But some of the cast.
You can think of people better to play them, maybe?
Well, I can't actually think of any alternatives.
Well, there you go.
You know, that would have been a, you know, better casting choice. You know, everybody did great. Actually, everybody, when we talk about the cast, you have absolute stellar. I don't think this series would have done as well as it did if it didn't have Hiddleston and Laurie.
Yep. And those two. Oh. Go ahead.
Well, DeBecky, Olivia Colman being Burr, she was awesome.
Oh, yes. Oh, did you know? Have you read the book?
No, but I think I know where you're going with this, and it's really interesting.
In the original, in the book, Olivia Colman's character, Miss Angela Burr, was actually written as a male. Her character, they turned her female when they decided to do the miniseries, thinking that it would be a bit more realistic, because women are guided a lot by their emotions and not so much by logic normally. So I guess they were thinking that, you know, it would seem a little bit more real that she was pushed to go after Roper like she was because of the things that she had seen. But in the original, she was not a she was a he. She was Chief Leonard Burr, a he. And Leonard Burr is the one who had a, pardon the expression, Burr under his saddle for Richard Roper.
Yeah.
But yeah, but she pulled it off magnificently. She was amazing. And now every time I see her in a movie, I'm like, oh my God, that's her.
Yeah. You know, she's, to me, in the last few years, is just instantly recognizable as a fantastic actress.
Absolutely.
She played Elizabeth in The Crown. Yeah. You know, I kind of knew her from that. But, you know, and I have heard some detractors that have criticized them turning this into, you know, a female part. You know, Angela Burr was supposed to be, you know, Leonard Burr.
Leonard, yeah.
But Olivia Colman, when you're putting her in a production, you want her. And they made a good move.
They did.
It was the one that I thought was a fantastic casting choice.
Oh, yeah. And not only did she audition, she was called to audition.
Yeah, right, yeah, you want her.
Yeah, so, you know, it wasn't just like she showed up to a blind casting call. Oh, no. They called and requested that she come in. Now, she was 3 months pregnant at the time, which is why the character is pregnant in the series. She let them know now as soon as they auditioned her, and they loved her. She let them know straight up that she was pregnant and it would have to be a part of that, or they would just have to do shots from the, you know, chest up. But there are ways around that. But she actually argued her point to the director using the character from Fargo as a talking point.
What?
Yep. She used... let me get to my notes.
In Fargo. Oh, yeah.
All right, let me find it. Hang on, I got like 15 pages of notes, guys. Sorry.
Frances McDormand.
Yes, Frances McDormand. On another sidebar, which we discussed this last, the last show as well, Frances McDormand is the one who handed Colman her Oscar for Best Actress for her performance in The Favourite.
What?
In 2018, yes. It was McDormand that handed her Oscar after using her as a talking point to tell them why she was perfect for the role, even while she was pregnant.
You know, that's fantastic. And we could have led with that. That is some amazing trivia.
Oh, yeah. And also, speaking of Miss Olivia, there were a couple of different ideas and attitudes after the show was so significantly popular. This was a group investment, should I say, between the U.S. and the BBC. Now, it premiered in April, I want to say, on the BBC, and it premiered the month later in the U.S. on the AMC channel. But this was a joint effort, and Miss Olivia was, where's my notes? There was a talk of a possible sequel, another miniseries, season two, after the first one was so wildly popular. However, they were, of course, wanting Hiddleston as Jonathan Pine, and they were wanting Olivia as Angela Burr, and she had already made other commitments. And that is one of the reasons why it did not move forward.
It could have been.
Oh, yes. This next comment is pure speculation, but I'm wondering if possibly another reason for no season two is that John Le Carré was not willing to write on demand and was not willing to give the rights to the name over. Either one of those would have been enough to put the kibosh on it. But, I mean, John Le Carré is an amazing author, so...
Yeah.
And, I mean, come on. I write. I write everything from short stories to novel-length books. And,
that's right.
You know, the thing about it is, those are my babies. You want to try to take that and turn it into... No. No. Sorry, that's not happening. Yeah. So, yeah, I totally get it.
Well, and, you know, we're talking about John Le Carré. He's not really hurting,
It's Le Carré, not Le Carré?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Well, you know, if he wants to say, no, you can't do that, and I guess I'm going to be missing out on $20 million, he has that right, and...
He has that ability.
Sir, you're amazing. You know, I mean, hey.
Yeah, he definitely has the ability. Oh, we were discussing... Corky in episode 4. One of the cool things about John Le Carré, and he's been doing this for longer than Stan Lee, in every episode, in every carnation of his work that's brought from book to film in any kind of way, whether it's a miniseries, a TV movie, a cinematic production, he always has a cameo. In the one scene where Corky shows his ass in the restaurant.
In the restaurant, yep.
And, you know, makes a big mess and really just causes a whole lot of havoc trying to make sure that Jonathan Pine and Jeb understand that he's seen them, he thinks he knows what's going on, and he could drop the dime on them. The elderly gentleman that is most disturbed by this whole performance, Pine goes over and offers to pay for his dinner, pay for the whole meal, add a bottle of champagne, all this. The man that he's talking to is Mr. John Le Carré.
Yeah. And, you know, that was a fantastic scene, you know, and Corky showed his ass, and we ended up kind of learning a lot about the story. That being said, Le Carré was the customer, and Hiddleston was very gracious. He played the part that he was supposed to play. He's the manager of the hotel.
But that he wasn't at that time.
Right. What? Right.
And there,
you know, and the ruse was actually pretty complete. I believed him.
Well, yeah,
you know, and I know what I know because I, you know, I was watching it and I knew, you know.
Right.
That.
And but you bring up a good point. There is one other thing that Corky just keeps pounding at is, all right, you've got Andrew Birch was the one. The character that he assumed when he went to Devon. They pull up his rap sheet. He's got drug sales. He's got murder. He's got evading arrest. He's got, I mean, all kinds of really nasty things. And someone who does not mind stepping out of the box in order to take care of business and do things the way he feels they should be done. Well, then you see Jonathan Pine character interacting with Corky, with Jeb, with Roper, with Roper's kid, and
right.
They're not the same people. The
right.
Difference between the persona on paper and the one that you actually see, totally, they don't even meet in the middle. They're not the same person. Corky seems to be the only one who picks up on this, and he knows something's rotten in Denmark from the very beginning.
Yeah. You know, I love that he wasn't just a henchman kind of type. You know, this guy had a lot of potential. He was a very smart operative.
Unfortunately, he had absolutely no moral compass.
Yes,
and,
right.
You know, he was a trained killer. That is what he did. That is what he loved. And he went to the highest bidder, who happened to be Roper. And unfortunately, you know, that was the end of him. But, you know, he was very observant, very smart. A lot more than anybody, including Roper, gave him credit for.
Frankly, yes. Yes.
But of course, you know, Roper's instincts can't be wrong. He's the boss, right?
Right. You know, that being said, Tom Hollander, he did really, really, really great.
Oh, it's hard for me to watch him in other movies now. Because of that instinct, you know, as soon as I see him on screen, I'm like, you know, the chill creeps up your back. It's great. But he did that. He played that character so well and brought that person to life so well.
So he was in, Tom Hollander was in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Was he? Okay, how did I not find that?
I'm looking around.
Okay, I did not pull up his filmography, so that might be it, but yeah. Because I researched everybody who worked on this miniseries. All right, guys, I dropped the ball. Apparently, Carrie picked it up, so let's hear it. Who was he on Pirates?
You know what? I'm having a look around. I knew that he was in it. Hang on. Let's see.
Okay, while you're looking, I've got a couple of different things. Now, when... Roper's character brings the passport to Pine's character to Tom Hiddleston's character, Pine, after they've had to shred his Quince because Quince has been busted and now he's wanted for murder and all that kind of good stuff. He says he put it under the name Andrew Birch. And he makes the comment, "It's a tree. I figured you'd like it." Well, all of his aliases are trees. You've got Pine, Linden, Quince, and Birch. Every single one of them are trees or tree related. So I thought that was kind of cool. And then, oh yes, with the advent of the cinematic production they were hoping to procure. They wanted Dustin Hoffman as Jonathan Pine, and they wanted the great, late, great Sidney Pollack to direct. Oh, yeah. That would have been an amazing production. However, a two-hour, even a three-hour cinematic production would not have been as good as this six-hour miniseries. I just don't see it. And one more thing about the directors. I found this really, really awesome. There were two Le Carre productions that were filmed in 2015 and released in 2016. Yes, I'm looking through my notes again. One of them was Miss Susanna White. She directed One of a Kind, Traitor. And then you have Miss Suzanne Beer, who directed The Night Manager. Now, the two first names are extremely similar. Both were born in 1960. Now, Miss Beer was born on April 15th, but there is no specific date for Miss White. And if you pull up the two women's bios, they look enough alike to be siblings.
It works, right? Right, right.
Absolutely. I thought that was just really interesting that these two women, one is English, the other is Danish, but they share such similarities, and they both worked on the John Le Carre films. So, I like that. And there were a total of 15 or more set workers that worked on both films as well.
Okay, and they are?
I don't have their names.
Okay.
I tried to find them, actually, I did.
Well, and listen, I ended up finding Tom Hollander was a major character.
He was, I know exactly who he was.
He was, what was his name?
Cutler Beckett.
He was the English, yes.
Cutler Beckett,
yes.
Lord Cutler Beckett.
Yes, Lord Cutler Beckett.
Oh my, how did I, all right, guys, I dropped the ball, sorry.
Well, so we got some degrees of separation of one.
Wow.
Depp and Hiddleston.
Well, there are so many one degrees. You've got Robert Downey Jr. You've got now Hollander. You've got Paul Bettany. You've got...
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah. Many.
Yeah.
Wow. Cutler Beckett. Oh, my... How did I miss that? I got the one with Johnny and the dude with the one eye. I got that one.
Right. Oh, well, if you want to connect him with that guy, you're going to connect a lot of people. That man has worked a lot.
Oh, and he changes, though. He doesn't look the same on any two films. And, you know, when I saw him in Finding Neverland, I was like... Oh, he looks like that guy, but he's so much younger. Oh, my goodness, there's no way that's the same guy. He's like, what, 18, 19 in this movie? There's no way he's the same guy. Yeah, he was. It's just amazing. He changes his look with every single film he does. He's incredibly versatile. Oh, I have... some other very interesting information. Now, you only see certain passports a couple of times. You see Richard Roper's once, and you see Andrew Birch's once. No, I'm sorry, it's not Andrew Birch. It's Thomas Quint. So, now with Richard Roper's, most of the information on the passport is actually correct. It says it's a British passport, which, of course, he is British. It gives the same Now, this is what I didn't get. It gives the same issue date as Thomas Quince, which is March 15th, 2014. But, however, it gives his birth date as June 11th, 1954. By the way, Hugh Laurie, happy birthday. Sorry we're not doing a show on you, but hey.
Oh, what? Oh.
Yeah. His actual birthday is June 11th, 1959, which makes him 5 years younger than the character he is portraying.
Holy crap. And Hugh Laurie is actually only 11 years older than me?
Yeah. Born in 1959.
Amazing.
Yep.
What?
Yeah. Now, if you want to discuss Mr. Thomas Quint's passport, they give his birth date as October 4th, 1981. Well, his actual birth date is February 9th, 1981, giving him 8 months, you know, after original birthday.
Pretty accurate.
Right.
I mean, pretty close, pretty close.
Yeah, yeah. And why they were so pinpoint on his and not... Either actor could play pretty much any age.
Sure.
But, you know, Hiddleston especially, in the very first Thor, if you equate the Asgardian years to Earth years, he was only about 17.
Right.
And he was being played by a 31-year-old man.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. And he looked the part. It was great. The type of passport is a type P, which in American, if it was an American passport, it would automatically assume to be a personal passport. However, the British have stepped up and said that type P merely indicates that the passport can be read by a machine, like you can scan the barcode, that kind of thing. So which one is correct? I don't know. Relaying information, but either sounds plausible to me.
Yeah, and in 2015, you know.
Right.
That'll age.
The issue date, like I said, was March 15th, 2014. Actually, the passport ID number was 5701A as an Apple 109. Yeah, I kind of do a lot of research when I do research.
Hey,
deep. I can tell you what the jet skis were that they used to ride to the restaurant.
Okay. And you know what? Actually, I'm going to throw it out. It's either Yamaha or Kawasaki jet skis.
Oh, you think? Right. You think?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
Actually, no.
Huh?
No. Wrong on both counts. The speedboats used in episode 2 to go to the seaside restaurant are made by the Australian company Frasier.
God. Okay.
Model 1017GT.
Okay, you're such a nerd.
Yes. Yes, I am. I love
That's
it.
That's meant to be a compliment. Yeah.
Let's see. I think there was one or two more points I wanted to touch on before we say bye. Once it was popular in the U.S. and Britain, it was sold to over 180 companies. By the International Management Group, IMC, or IMG. It was filmed in the 50th anniversary year of the first film adaptation for John le Carré, The Spy Who Came in from the Cold. That was done in 1965.
You're blowing my mind right now, actually, and I want to like step out for a second. You have really done your research for this episode.
We're right there at the cut point, so let's get one more out there, and then we will say bye, and everything will be done. All right, one more. All right,
sure.
What the first time you see Mr. Burke? Now you don't ever hear his first name. It's always Mr. Burke. When you first see him, you hear about him all the time. You first see him in episode 5. He is laying passed out with a book, like, on his chest as if he'd fallen asleep reading. Now, the book is called Fatherland by a writer named Richard Harris. And this is what I'm going to have to check out. It is an alternative history spy novel. Alternative history basically states that something happened in this timeline that did not happen in ours, which in this book is when the Nazi Germany won World War II. So that is the book he is reading while his wife is combating illegal arms sales. Kind of, you know, it's convoluted, but I get it.
Yeah, right.
But the books are a major influence in this movie. You've got that. You've got the book that Pine's father wrote in that Angela continues to mess with. You've got, there's a book that he continuously carries with him throughout his different itinerations at the hotels. And I guess that's simply because he is an author and, you know, he understands the impact and the real, you know, I guess impact is the right word, that books have on people.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a great series. It's one worth watching. One other thing that I noticed and I absolutely loved, whoever created the opening sequence the bombs turning into jewelry, turning into bombs, turning into jewelry, freaking it's so tastefully and cleanly done, it's hard to see it.
Yeah.
You have to watch really closely.
Yeah, I never skipped the intros. You know, always cool.
Oh, sometimes I do. Some series, oh yeah, it's just like, I've seen it before.
Well, those, but not Night Manager.
No, Night Manager, no. That is, like, the most incredible opening sequence I think I've ever seen.
And that's another British thing, I think, you know, that coming from Bond.
Right.
You know, those opening sequences, sorry, and, you know, the British are like, well, we have to do it like Bond. And you know what? Thank God they do. And they usually pull it off, because they really pull it off.
You're absolutely 100% correct on that one. I've never seen a British production that I'm sitting there at the opening credits going, I'm bored. No.
Yeah.
They always, I mean, it's something that captures your attention.
Yeah, you know, the British use... And, of course, you have to notate who helped you make this in the opening sequence. But they make you riveted, and you're like, oh, yeah, that guy was great. Anyway, oh, my God.
Right.
You know, I was definitely interested in the production people subconsciously just because I loved the title sequence.
Right. I mean, I did know the name, M16s. What are they? The bombs that drop down in like a U formation, turning into the pearls at one point.
Yeah, it's like a cluster bomb kind of thing.
Yeah, it was great. I just loved it. But it's so perfect for the Night Manager series as well. And the production company, they've been known for doing various other American works, and they're not near as entrancing as the sequence they do for Night Manager. So
yeah, they knew that they had to bring it probably.
Well, and the financiers were not going to accept less.
Absolutely.
But they did a jam up job, and guys, you know, unfortunately, now we see what you can do. We're going to be asking for more.
Well, listen, you know, as we're drawing to a close here, I wanted to ask, and I'm kind of throwing this as a surprise. Episode 6, And since episode one or two, we were hoping that these bad guys would meet their comeuppance.
Right.
Jen, how happy were you with how it all ended? How did you love Roper's ending?
All right.
Did you like it? Did you love it?
First off, I loved the fact that when he came back to Cairo, Jonathan went to Yusef to get assistance. Yusef didn't ask who or why or what. He said yes, because this is his friend. And even though he had to maintain a distance because he didn't want any of Roper's associates to see him with this head chef now, instead of just a kitchen worker. But the guy who plays Yusef, yeah, amazing, loved him,
right,
it was great.
Right,
but
right.
I loved that part of it. I loved the attitude that, okay, cops are not going to find this guy. Border Patrol is not going to find this guy. We've wasted every single one of our get out of jail free cards. Nothing is going to stop this sale except, well, let's just blow him the fuck up.
Yep.
Which is exactly what he did.
Yep.
Yeah. Cell phone car bomb trigger was all it took. And, you know, he had it boom, 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 done. Before that, you don't know what he's doing, but he calls into the bank and he pulls all the money out of the account. He can do that because he is the sole proprietor of that account. So he does that, and then everything falls to shit. The truckloads of weapons blow up. Everything's gone, and now they take him, they take Roper and Frisky and Tabby are the three that they catch. They take those three and they attempt to put them in jail. I have a feeling, though, with the two people that they were put into a paddy wagon with, I'm kind of wondering Roper is ever going to make it.
Right, right. I don't feel too good about it. But.
So, on a whole, yes, I was very pleased with the outcome. On the downside, I would have loved to have seen that big Samoan-looking guy just pound him.
And destroy his skull.
Actually,
and the way they ended up kind of doing the ending, if Le Carre would have kind of agreed to sort of a sequel or a follow-up or whatever, you're like, okay, it's kind of open-ended enough.
Yeah.
He's not going to do it. And so knowing that, I am actually pretty satisfied with the ending of The Night Manager.
However,
it up to your imagination, but I think we all know.
Oh, yeah. But however, I was not happy with Hamid's end. And I will tell you why. This kid, and I don't care how old he was still a kid. He was still acting like a kid. He was still, nothing matters but me, just like a kid.
That's right. He was a survivor in a way.
No, he was not a survivor. If he was a survivor, none of this would have happened. He was a user, a taker, and he had been taught to be that way by his parents.
Sure.
You know, when you're the richest people in the area, you kind of get whatever the hell you want, and you get away with whatever you want. Well, he was Sophie Alicant's lover, and he is the reason that she ended up dying. And although Jonathan got to kill him, himself.
Mm-hmm.
He was high on drugs. He was fucked up and he really didn't give much of a fight. And that was just really disappointing to me.
Because I recognized him as you have a lot of, kind of user, like using people.
Oh, he was a definite user.
you know, wealthy people that feel privileged and they get away with that sort of thing.
Especially in a country like Egypt.
Yeah, well, you know what? A lot of those, you know, people perhaps in situations like that, you would be a survivor. That being said, it didn't work out for him very well.
No, it didn't. He trusted the wrong people and...
Yeah, but and exactly. He ended up kind of throwing in his lot. He just booked on the wrong horse.
But the thing about it is, that seems to be a recurring theme in the entire series, is trusting the wrong people.
Wow.
Roper trusts Jonathan Pine. Jed trusts Roper. Corky trusts Roper. Hamid trusts them both. All of them get fucked, except for Jed and Jonathan.
You know, as kind of a takeaway of the series, and it was very enjoyable, that is a really interesting and very solid kind of takeaway. You know, it really does come down to who do you trust?
Which
you know,
goes
we
back
know who's
to.
Who's bad, who's good. Right, right,
which
right.
Which goes
and,
back to
you know,
Batman. Who do you trust? Money, money, money.
Oh, my God. No, you didn't. Jack Nicholson. Oh, my God. And you're so right.
Yep. But it is. It all comes down. And, you know, unfortunately, that's kind of the situation it comes down to in life itself. Who do you trust?
Yeah, well, it makes me kind of think that Night Manager was fantastic. It was, but it was a bit overly optimistic.
It was. However.
You know, the good guys won. The bad guys ended up getting in the back of a paddy wagon with a couple of psychos. But
and the only one who really got damaged in the whole thing was Corky, who deserved it, and Jed, who didn't.
Wow. Wow. Winners and losers. It was a really great series.
Yeah, all in all, I think good guys and bad guys, I think they came up with a draw.
Yep, and that's so Lacar.
It is. So guys, get the book. Read it. Check out John Lacar. He is an amazing author, and he's had many, many different works translated to film, whether it be cinematic or miniseries or made for TV. So check him out. He's great.
Yeah.
And I think we're about at the end of our broadcast. So next week we are doing the conclusion of The Many Loves of Johnny Depp. And that will be centered on Kate Moss and Vanessa Paradis. So we will be doing that next week.
And certainly a little bit of Amber Heard, right?
Oh, yeah, we're going to have to talk about that. I'm not going to say it.
Well, he married her, so.
But he was an idiot, so.
But we'll talk about it later. Right, right, right.
I always said he never should have let Winona go. All right, all right, all right. I'll let it go.
All right.
All right, guys. You know how to find us. DeppHeadsAndHiddlestoners@yahoo.com. That's our email. You can find our blog at DeppHeadsHiddlestoners.com. Or you can go through BarryReese.net. Click the link. Take you right to us. Let's see what else. We're on Facebook at the group Deppheads and Hiddlestoners. We're on Instagram sometimes when I can get it to work with Deppheads and Hiddlestoners. And we're on multi different streaming services under the same name. So,
absolutely. Many different ways to reach us.
Absolutely. And I am very pleased to announce we got our first live comment from our blog. So apparently, someone likes my tattoos. So thank you. Appreciate it. I like them myself.
Yes.
But yeah, if you guys, hey, send me pictures of your tattoos. I'll post them. It's great. But anyway, yeah, stay safe. Be good. Be careful who you trust. We'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.